irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Question Reality with Priscilla Leona, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Question Reality, the absolute best entertainment career advice internet radio show anywhere in the world, I like to say. I'm a little biased because it's my show, but I just say it's the best ever. Well, Google says that too, because if you go to Google and you type Question Reality or LA Talk Radio or Priscilla Leona, you're going to see that we're number one. So I think I'm justified in saying that. My name is Priscilla Leona. I am the producer and host, and we are coming to you live from Los Angeles, California. This show is for you if you are questioning your career reality by considering or currently pursuing a career in the entertainment industry. Now, for 9 years, our radio show guests have provided advice, tips, and resource information on how and what it takes to successfully pursue a career in a wide variety of show business jobs. And the guests on our show include Emmy winners, Grammy winners, Tony Award winners. We've got reality TV stars, producers, directors, casting directors, talent managers, agents, screenwriters. Let's see, we got actors and singers, songwriters, comedians, novelists, of course, today, script supervisors, stunt people. Oh my gosh, the list just goes on and on and on and on. I suggest that you just go to our website and you will be able to see the names of the people and what their title is. So if you're interested in a particular career, you go to latalkradio.com, you type in Question Reality, or we're on Channel 1, and you can look at a list, and we are on their archive, on the archive page. And all of our guests on our show have been selected because they're at different stages of their career, from professional to beginner. Once in a while, we throw a beginner in there. And that means that we'll definitely have someone on the show who will be able to answer your show business career questions. And again, if you missed any of our shows, or as I said, want to seek advice about a specific entertainment career, you would have to go to our archive page on the latalkradio.com website, search our title, Question Reality, my name, Priscilla Leona, and you can listen or download any of those shows 24 hours a day. And definitely, once you're on our show, you will be there until I decide to move on, which hasn't been for 9 years. So if you came on in 2008, you're still on there and people are still listening to your radio show all over the world. So that's what's great about internet radio. All of the Question Reality radio shows are also available for free on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher.com under the podcast section. And I want you to make sure that you get our newly designed free app, and it's located on the home page of the latalkradio.com website, and it's located towards the bottom. And that way you can listen to my show 24 hours a day or any of the other shows that are on LA Talk Radio. Very exciting shows, great topics. They cover everything on LA Talk Radio. I mean everything, spiritual, emotional, guitar. Oh gosh, just go and check it out and look at the channel 1 and channel 2. There's so many topics, I can't even think of all of them. And finally, very exciting news, if you want to be a guest or refer someone to be on the show to promote themselves, their products, and help listeners with their sage career advice, we are currently booking for the fall. You know, our show is always booked 6 months to a year in advance. So thank goodness. But we're currently booking for the fall now. So I think September, October, November. I don't know if that falls in. I think that actually falls into fall, winter. But I don't know. I just call it fall. Anyway, just go to our official website. Now, that's different from the latalkradio.com website. That is Question Reality Radio Show.com. questionrealityradioshow.com. That's our official website. And you just click the contact link. And that way you can submit for interview consideration to be on our show, to be considered. You'll get on. My goodness, you might have to wait. But if you're working professionally in the entertainment industry, you will get there sooner or later. Just submit. Okay, so enough about me and my show. Let's talk about the guest. My goodness, we have been so excited to have her on the show today. Her name is Nikki Alexander, and Nikki Alexander is a writer and an author. And I believe that Nikki is sure to become one of your favorite authors after reading her inaugural book entitled What the Devil Meant for Bad, God Used for My Good. Now, isn't that a title? That's a great title. It sounds like a movie title. I'm loving that title, whoever came up with that. Nikki Alexander spares no emotional expense in this first release. And each page is a breathtaking moment on her personal path of pain, her faith, and triumph. And this book is going to inspire you, and it's going to help you to begin to realize that you too can have victory in your life. And she says, the devil is a liar and you are not your past. That is a direct quote. And she says, you are not alone and can have a joyful life and live life abundantly, free from bondage and despite your past experiences. So who does it, who's going through hell and trauma and drama, doesn't want to hear that? My goodness. So we want to talk to Nikki right now and find out how we can change our lives. Welcome to the show, Nikki.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, Nikki Alexander, my goodness. Now, Nikki, I understand from your brief bio that you grew up in the inner city. I don't know what inner city that is because I'm just reading your bio here, but it says you grew up in the inner city and graduated from Lincoln High School. Oh, wait, it is here, in the southern sector of Dallas. So there we go, the inner city of Dallas. You're also a communications, I believe you're still working in telecommunications in the industry. You've been in it for 14 years from what I understand, and you're a finance specialist. Who the hell doesn't need a financial specialist? As a matter of fact, my husband and I were talking about, we got to talk to one, because the older you get, you need to talk to a financial specialist to get your affairs in order, because after you're 40, it feels like you're going to die any day. So you want to get all your affairs in order. So we are heading down the path to talking to a financial specialist. So it's just weird that you are one. It also says in your bio that you have your gruesome life experiences and triumphs in this tell-all autobiography will certainly define the trials and tribulations that you endured and overcame. And that you are a source of motivation and encouragement to other survivors of mental, physical, and emotional abuse. So I know that you must be enthusiastic about this book, and hope that it's going to touch many, many lives. The more people that buy it, obviously, the more lives it'll touch. So far, what has been the response from your book since it went out to the press?
There's been an overwhelming positive response. Everyone that corresponds or leaves even a quote on Amazon or Barnes & Noble says that it was a page-turner. They couldn't put it down, that it was inspiring, or that it helped them through a difficult relationship. So it's just been a blessing. God has been just opening door after door after door for this book ever since it hit the stands.
Oh, I can hear that Southern accent. I hear that little Dallas touch. I love that. Now, your book covers the topics of depression, suicide, domestic violence, women, and porn. Now, tell us, how were you personally exposed to all these things? Because pretty much I've only known you a couple seconds, and it sounds like we're doing this remotely because she's obviously in Dallas, I believe. But obviously you sound like a very happy, chipper person. So my question is, how were you personally exposed to all of these things, and you sound so happy?
Well, it's it started out when I was 5 years old. I was molested by my mom's boyfriend. And then I was exposed to pornography at the age of 9 years old. I then married a minister who was domestically violent for 10 years. And just how God brought me through all that to where I am now happily remarried.
What? Oh, yes. No. Oh, my gosh. So wait a minute. Take us back. You just spanned the whole entire collection there. This is just terrible. Take us back to when you were a child, when you were molested by your mother's boyfriend. Did you tell her right away? And what happened as a result of that?
I didn't tell her. He threatened to kill me, and I had two other sisters. He threatened to kill them as well if I told her. And of course, I was only 5 years old, so I believed him. It took me 10 years to tell her. So I didn't tell her until I was like 15 years old. And at that time, of course, I'm in high school, so she's assuming, you know, that I'm getting active with boys, and I'm trying to tell her, no, I'm not, and then that's how it came out. The reason I'm not sexually active is because, you know, this person molested me when I was five, and that's how it finally came to light.
Isn't that... Now, was it just the one time, or was this a reoccurring situation?
Oh, it was every opportunity that he got. And it wasn't just him. It was also some family friends of the family that we grew up around as well.
Are you kidding me? Did he know? Was he the one that said, hey, you know, let's join the bandwagon, the son of a bitch? Oh, I hate to say it, but I'm just so mad right now. But did he know they were doing this as well? Or was this an individual secret between each?
Yeah, it was an individual secret.
Is that normally how it happens, where there are many family members that are molesting a child and they all keep it secret?
Well, normally, that experience taught me not to expose my children to everybody, family or not, because you don't know what secrets or what struggles they're going through. And my mother, she was 16 when she had my older sister, 18 with me, and then 21 with my younger sister. So she was very young and naive. So she didn't really care who we spent time with. You know, it was just like she was really like our big sister. And so she exposed us to these people without protecting us really the way that she should have been.
Right.
And this is how this happened, you know, in so many different occurrences.
Now, when this happened, you said you didn't tell her until you were a teen. Did she continue to stay with this man, like, for a long time?
She actually had broken up with him when I was seven, or about six or seven, and I remember it so like it was yesterday. He was outside breaking the windows out of her car, and we were upstairs in an apartment watching from the window. And then he came back around when I was about 12, and my mom said, Nikki, do you remember this person? And I said, yes. And she said, you're not going to speak? And I said, no. And she thought I was being disrespectful, so she slapped me in front of him, not knowing I was afraid of him. I didn't want to speak to him because of what he had done to me. And I was terrified, you know, still of telling. Even after she slapped me, I still didn't want to tell her why I didn't want to speak to him.
Wow. Now, between these years of when she broke up with him, which I would imagine would have been thrilling for you to hear this, from 7 to 12, so 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, so that's 5 years, right? 5 years he's out of your life, and you don't have to deal with him. Did you still have to deal with the other family members continuing to molest you?
I did. I had to deal with that, and I also dealt with a lot of nightmares and just personal trauma from me holding all of that in, you know, and not telling anybody.
Yeah, so there was no one that you felt, because as a child, I can't imagine what you went through, honestly, but I'm trying to get other people to maybe possibly, I don't think children listen to my show, but maybe possibly adults could promote this particular mindset. I am so sorry. I don't know what is going on with my phone. Just things coming through. I apologize, Nikki. So with you being a child, you did not you were not able to, oh my goodness, I apologize, I keep getting messages on my phone. I did not turn my phone off, Nikki Alexander. I am so sorry. Okay. So as a child, obviously, if you are not around people who are coming to you and saying, you know what, if there's anything going on in your household and you're unhappy about it, you can tell me, I'm here to help you. Obviously, you did not have that outlet. What did you do? Because I have heard of children being molested one time and they kill themselves, right? Or they start drinking, doing drugs, etc. What did you do, or who did you have in your life, or how did you remain so strong mentally to be able to put up a barrier or whatever you did to get you through that particular time in your life as a child?
It's funny you mentioned that, because I remember trying to suffocate myself when I was only about 6 years old with a pillow. I remember because it was happening so often. My sisters had two different dads. We all had three different dads. So their dads were more active in their life. So, of course, they spent more time away from home. And it was just really me and my mom's boyfriend left alone quite a bit. And so it was happening a lot. And I tried to commit suicide. But the way that I got through it in my childhood, my grandmother was my rock. My dad's mother, she passed away in 2014. And she taught me about God and the Word of God. And I found comfort in my relationship with God and in my faith. And that's what really pulled me through those times when I didn't know what else to do.
Now, question on that. When your grandmother exposed you to your faith and God and was telling you whatever she told you and it made you feel strong, did you ever wonder as a child, well, since there's a God, why is he not making this stop or taking these people away or, you know, doing whatever he should be doing to stop this? What were you thinking about that?
I was thinking not in his ability to save me, but why am I still here? Why am I still here to suffer through this? And as I got older, what I realized was the reason why was so that I could tell my story so that other people who have gone through it could be helped to be pushed through it as well, because a lot of people don't make it through it. And right. Especially as I got older and I got into the domestically violent marriage to the minister, that my faith had grown so strongly at that point, even though I was a young adult. I would spend a lot of quality time in God's word and crying out to him and praying. And in those moments were my growth moments, is what I call them. So I was able to get through that way.
Mm. Now when this man came back in your mother's life and you're 12, these other particular men were still continuing to molest you. Or did they stop and, you know, either hopefully get killed or go to jail or something horrible happened to them? Or was it at 12 years old, this was still happening with all of them?
No, those were other one-time occurrences. My mother's boyfriend was the most frequent person to molest me. And he came to visit the church that we were going to that Sunday when I was 12. And after that, I never saw him again. Even when I became older and I told my mom that I wanted to tell him that I forgave him, she refused to give me his contact information. Basically, once I confided in her at 15, she wanted me to never bring it up again. And I wanted her as my mom to come to my aid, you know, call the police, do something, but other than sweep it under the rug and act like nothing happened. And we were never able to develop the relationship that I wish she and I could have had.
Right. Well, I don't know how old you are, but I can say that depending on what her age is, I find that a lot of mothers, from what I hear, they grew up in a time where that was very standard, that you didn't talk about that, it was known within the families, but you sweep it under the carpet, and that was just what you were taught. So those are usually mothers that are now, I think, maybe in their 60s, 70s, 80s, 80 years old, because, you know, that's how it was back then. But then, you know, that's no excuse for it, but, you know, it was very common for certain age groups, as it is with different things in certain age groups to still be prevalent. So oh my goodness. So flash forward, we're going to assume that the molesting stopped. You're 15 now, or so did you stay in school? I mean, I imagine you did, because you're obviously very educated and you have a great job. So how were you able, was it your grandmother that kept you in the real and now, as far as teaching you that education is important and teaching you to hang on to your faith? Is she the one that got you through school? You know, who were the people in your life that helped you get through it, other than your grandmother?
She was really the main one. I stayed with my mother full time, but a lot of nights I would go to my grandmother's house to go to school from her house. But she was the one that kept me grounded and kept my head on straight. She was the only one in my life that was providing guidance. You know, my mom and dad were pretty young and they were dating different people and doing their own thing. And my grandmother was really the one who raised all of us.
So you're, yeah. So I, obviously they say victim becomes victim. So because of you growing up in this particular world, you said that you went on to marry who, I would assume that because your grandmother turned you on to God and religion, you would feel safe marrying a minister. You would think, oh, he's going to be my protector. This is a man of God, so to speak, quote unquote. So I assume that that was a thought in your mind, and you marry him. Tell us about what happens when you marry this minister.
When we first met, it was his story was just so different from mine. His parents were still together. They had been married over 30 years, I think, at that time. His dad was actually the senior pastor of the church, and his mom, of course, the first lady. And so I just thought, you know, this is different. Maybe this is the direction that I'm supposed to go in. And it wasn't until we dated very shortly, which was bad. And at that time, I had already had my oldest daughter. She was about six months or 7 months old when I met him. And we dated for about 5 or 6 months and then got married, which was terrible. But shortly after we got married, I started realizing that this picture that was painted for me from his family was very different from what it actually was. His mother was being domestically abused by his dad. She was stealing from the church. She was threatening to commit suicide. I mean, it was just a lot going on. You would think, oh, these people are in the ministry, but they are human beings first, and there was just a lot of chaos going on. And with me being young and gone through the abuse that I went through with my mother throughout my whole childhood, and then the molestation, and now being in this situation, I was like, okay, God, this can't be all life is. It's like I went through my childhood through hell, and then now I'm married to this person. I'm married into hell, and it just continued for the first 31 years of my life. It was like hell on earth. He began to abuse me shortly after we got married, so I didn't even see that side of him until we got married.
Wow. So it's amazing. It is amazing. And we all, people, we hear these stories all the time, and then people who are not exposed to this, they say, how could you not know? Surely there were some signs. Surely did you not do research? Did you not ask his friends? But you know, that who goes around doing that? I mean, it's in retrospect, you can always say that. But when you're young and you're caught up in the relationship and you weren't taught to do those things, unless somebody tells you, you don't know to do that. You don't know to do research on people. You don't know to do these things. So that's the answer to the question. Unless you have people reaching out and teaching you, you're not going to know. That's how they didn't know people. That's how they didn't know. This is what Nikki Alexander is trying to tell you, that you cannot just go by appearances. Just because somebody's a minister or a priest or a pastor, my goodness, do we not need to talk about what happened in the Catholic Church with the altar boys and the priests? Come on, people. Right. I swear, I the longer I live, the longer, and you listen to the news, which I try to avoid, honestly, like the plague, which is not realistic, but it is realistic, because if you want to even have a semblance of happiness, I can't listen to the news because it is nothing but atrocities. And it just makes me realize just how horrible some people are. And it scares me, Nikki, to think that people can do the things that they do to other people. Yeah. Molest a grown person. Molesting a baby, a child, Yeah. How sick are you to do that? But it happens, Nikki, as you know, every day. And there are people that you come in contact with in a day that you have no idea that could be molesting children. And you think that they are these intelligent, powerful people, and they are doing things like that. So it's really scary to think that, you know, humans are vile, you know, they're vile, nasty creatures. I'm not going to say all of them, but I'm starting to think the older that I get that it's a little bit more than 50% of the world. And that's a sad way to look at it. But when you are exposed to all of these stories in the news, what are you supposed to think? So my question to you is, how do you now? I'm going to say something right now, because I think it's great that we're going to be able to come from two different perspectives, because you are a believer in God and I am an atheist. Yet you heard what I just said, right? And I think that you and I, even though you believe in God and I do not, and it's because of all the things that have happened to people in the world that has turned me from a person who believed in God to an atheist, honestly, I could not take it anymore, because my thought was, if there was a God, how could this being let children be molested? How could this being who in this Bible claims that he is going to watch over children and protect children and this and that, and he's all good and he heals and this, how could this person look at what people do to each other on this earth and not do something when these people are at the height of being, say, molested or beaten, or, you know, mothers killing their children or drowning their children? How, if I were a God, if I were a deity, and I saw that happening, I would do something. So let's talk about these two different perspectives. I cannot, in all good consciousness, logically and scientifically attach a belief to there being a God, because I don't think that I could ever let that happen to my children, which is what he's supposed to be, the father and God to all humans. So let's talk about that. How do you stay faithful and believe that there still is a God when all of these things happen in the world? These atrocities, Nikki, of being people doing these things to other people. How is it that you still believe that there is a God?
Because there's been so much evidence of him being in my life. For example, when I finally decided to leave my abusive husband, I didn't have a job. And I had my four children. I got an apartment and I was able to pay my rent up for 3 months in advance. So only he could do that and just look out for me the way that he does. And in situations that I've been in, he's brought insurmountable amounts of comfort. And I just know I can feel his presence when I'm praying and speaking to him and just spending time in his presence. So there's been too much evidence for me not to believe that he's not there. Unfortunately, there are people who go through hardships. And that doesn't mean that he doesn't love or care about them or the babies. But we live in a world where there's love and peace, but there's also evil, unfortunately, that's present in the world.
So you're saying that that there's a God, but then there's also the devil, and they have to balance each other out. They're like, they have to stay on their neutral, on their sides. How do you describe that? How do you explain the coexistence of God and the devil? Because you can't believe in God without believing in the devil, and vice versa, right?
True. Right. I just believe that God is all powerful. He's all knowing. The devil is not a surprise to him, nor are the tragedies that happen in the world. if you read in the Bible, it talks about how God says he will be there no matter what happens. And he knows that the devil is going to tempt you. He knows that the devil is going to try to cause trial and tribulation in your life. What he's looking for you to do is to draw to him. And if you're not doing that, then you have a will of your own. We all have our own will. So that's how you distinct the difference.
Right.
Okay. If I feel like if I had not drawn to him, I would. There's no telling where I would be, because there were times that I got so deeply depressed that I wanted to end my own life.
Right. All right. So you're saying that you felt some sort of a connection to a spiritual being that made you somehow realize that that was not the right thing to do and you could get through it, et cetera, et cetera.
Exactly.
Okay. Now, so you get out of this marriage. I imagine you divorced, right?
Yes.
You divorced.
Yes, happily.
And how did you pick yourself up by your bootstraps, so to speak, and move on to create a better life for yourself?
Well, we initially separated and we tried to come back together for like a year and go to counseling for whatever reason. Everybody said, well, you stayed for 10 years. Why did you finally leave? Well, he decided to divulge in counseling that he slept with my stepmother, which was my dad's wife. And so in my psyche, you know, I've been molested. So I'm like, if we put this together, that means that if I continue to have sex with you, then initially I'm actually having sex with my own father, because you've had sex with someone who my father has had sex. It was just too much. That was the straw that broke the camel's back for me. I felt like he couldn't stoop any lower than he had when he done that. My father's ex-wife was 15 years younger than him, so she was closer to our age, and he was having an ongoing affair with her.
My gosh, this sounds like material for Dynasty, or it sounds like it's a Lifetime movie of the week. My goodness gracious. Wow. You're right, though. I mean, think about it. That is an excellent rationalization. I mean, that is true, mm-hmm. if you're thinking about that. So I'm glad that, you know, popped into your mind that that is true. What inspired you to write this book? Because not everyone who goes through what you go through, what you've gone through, decides to write a book, right? First of all, wait, before we get to the book, did any of these things that happened to you cause you to turn to drugs, alcohol, you know, the typical things that happen when you're trying to deal with horrors that happen to you like that?
No, thankfully, I did not turn to drugs or alcohol.
Isn't that amazing? Isn't that amazing? See, that is an excuse, people. You don't have to. Look how strong Nikki was. Look at the atrocities that happened to Nikki, and she did not turn to drugs and alcohol. So you have to look at that. When people give leniency towards people who do drugs and alcohol and say, well, look at their life. Look at what happened to them. You know, of course they're an alcoholic or a drug addict. No, I have never accepted that as an excuse, ever. And Nikki is proof that you do not need to go there. That is taking the easy way out, if you ask me. Okay, so what happened to you? You finally get rid of, you grow up, so you become, you know, your own person. You can defend yourself. You can take care of yourself. You're not trapped by drugs and alcohol. How do you get, what do you do? You get rid of the husband, and then what do you do?
I actually re-enrolled in school and just started spending more time with my kids to take my mind off of the divorce and everything that was going on around me, because my family, they, like I told you before, when I was young, they already mistreated me my entire life. If you've ever seen the movie Antoine Fisher, that was my childhood, even without the molestation. And so they gravitated to his side because of his title as a minister. And so I was literally feeling just absolutely alone in this world when I was going through my divorce. So I kind of just secluded myself, me and my children, and just stayed in. And went to school and just focused on them and my job, and that was it. And okay. I got through it that way.
So you obviously that you, well, thank goodness the man did not, was not a sexual predator, your husband, but because of your past experiences, you obviously would not want your children around the husband because he could beat them, right? So how did you handle that? I mean, because you never know if he's going to be domestic, he's going to be violent towards the children, right?
And that's what's so crazy to me. He has never been violent toward them. It was always just me. So when we went through our divorce, they asked me if I wanted him to continue to have custody. And I told them, yeah. I said, he's a good dad. He just was a terrible husband. Yeah.
How is that possible? Can you explain that? How is it that a man can beat a woman but be like the best father? Can you explain that? I don't understand that. I have no answers for that.
I just believe that he grew up watching his dad do that to his mom, and he thought that that's what marriage was supposed to be about. And I don't give him any excuse whatsoever, but that's the dynamic that he witnessed as a child. And his dad wasn't domestically violent toward them, but he was domestically violent toward his mom. And I think he used that as an excuse for him to be that way also.
Wow. So then we could say that it is true what children see in the household, they tend to repeat. Not always, but maybe in general. So,
well,
oh my
thankfully
goodness.
In my case, I wanted to be the opposite of everything my parents was. And so
I try to raise my,
if they didn't teach me what to do, but they taught me what not to do. So
that's very good. That's a very good way to put it. They taught you. Yeah. You know what? I think that I had an epiphany. Wow. Okay. So thought just popped into my mind. Maybe children can think of this. Sometimes you're put with a family and taught how you're supposed to be. And maybe sometimes you're a child that's put in a family to teach you how not to be. Not everybody can be in the family to teach you how you should be. You're just going to have the harder path to teach you how you're not supposed to be. Wow. Wow.
Right, because they're still figuring it out for themselves.
I never thought of that before. Very interesting. Okay, so you're through that. You decide, you know what? I am going to get it going on. I'm going to get my life together. Tell us how you go from that situation to you being an extremely successful financial specialist at a leading mobility company here in the United States. How do you do it? How, Nikki, did you do this?
I don't know. I just think God gave me an instrumental amount of strength and courage and survival, because I went through so much, like I said, in the household with my mom, that I learned how to survive at an early age. She would leave us at home for days on end with no groceries, and we would come up with just combinations of whatever was left in the pantry to eat. And that, so I got that survival mode in me very young. And with me having my four children and had been to a homeless shelter myself when I was pregnant with my oldest daughter, I never wanted to take my children to a homeless shelter. So just that survival instinct in me just wanted to thrive and do something different for my life. And graciously, after 2 years of divorce, I met my now husband, and we've been together 6 years now and happily remarried 4 years this coming weekend. So God just turned it all around for me. Thank you.
Congratulations. My gosh. Finally, we've gotten to the rainbow, Nikki. We've gotten there. My goodness. It's smooth sailing from now on. My goodness.
Yeah.
So obviously, not everybody, as I started to say earlier, not everybody who's gone through what you've gone through decides to write a book. It could have gone very differently. You're very fortunate and one of the lucky ones, because honestly, there are many people who believe in God who are drug addicts and alcoholics because of the same things that you've gone through, and they still believe in God. And I have heard them say, well, you know, God's going to get me through it. Yet they are dealing with the alcoholism and the drugs and various other situations. What do you feel what do you say to people like that? What could you say to a person who still believes in God but yet they're still struggling with all of the same things and they never have quite been able to get out of the vicious cycle that they're experiencing?
Well, what I learned even in my own, like I told you, I was exposed to pornography when I was 9 years old, even with my own struggle with stopping pornography, which is not any different from struggling with a drug.
What do you mean with pornography? Were they taking pictures, filming you? Was it you or someone else?
No, I was exposed to pornography by one of my friends in the fourth grade. She snuck up to her parents' room and took a video from their room. And from 9 years old up until almost 30, I struggled with watching pornography and trying to stop and watching it and trying to stop. So that's what I was comparing it to.
Well, wait a minute. Okay. So you're saying that your friend in the fourth grade videotaped or got hold of a tape of her parents having sex and showed it to you? And this is
she got a hold of a video with some other strangers having sex, not her parents, but she took it from her parents' room.
Oh, I see. Oh, so they had a porn film.
Right.
And she brought it to you and you watched it.
Right, at 9 years old.
At 9 years old. And this is something that you gravitated towards and you came to like to watch.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. Obviously, because you did not understand how obviously not a psychiatrist or a psychologist or a therapist, sex therapist, but I can see the relation because of you being abused as a child by an adult. And then at a young age, you're seeing two adults having sex, but maybe you were exposed to the actual thought of sex or having sex with an adult, but you're a child and you couldn't process that because that might have been before you even knew that adults had sex. And that was like maybe a curiosity. Well, wait a minute. He was an adult and he's having sex with me and I'm a child, yet I'm looking at two adults having sex and you couldn't process that. So maybe that's where the fascination came from. What do you think?
Right. I believe so.
That sounds logical, right? Because you couldn't process it and you were watching it to try to process it, right? Or what do you think was the reason? I don't know. Tell me. You're the expert.
I was watching it and also trying to just figure out this thing called life on my own as a child. And so being exposed to it at 9 years old and trying to stop as an adult is no different from someone, I guess, having their first, I guess, hit of drugs or alcoholic beverage and they get turned out on drugs or alcohol. So I don't judge anybody and what they struggle with or what they go through because we all have our shortcomings and things that we shouldn't be doing in our life. Mm-hmm. And so I think that they're no different from you and I. It's just that we all make different choices.
And instead of turning to drugs and alcohol, you turn to porn.
Well, I was already exposed to porn as a little girl.
Right, so and then you got addicted to that. Well, that's a good thing. I'd rather be addicted to watching porn than drugs and alcohol. I'll take porn any day, honestly. That's a good choice. No, not really, but you know what I'm saying. My goodness. Yeah. Oh, so how did you overcome your addiction to porn?
I wanted to have a closer relationship with God, and I just remembered dwelling on his word and him saying in John 15:7, if you abide in me and my word abides in you, then whatsoever you ask, I will do it for you. And I just kept trusting that he would just take that away from me. And it wasn't that I was addicted to it. It's just when you're exposed to that type of euphoric feeling as a child, and you still don't know how to really process sex or love or marriage or, you know, and all this fantasy world is out there. That's what I got caught up in. And once I realized that it was a fantasy world, once I got older and realized that, I was able to let that go.
Wow. Well, see, you realize it wasn't a fantasy world. Without my little friend, because everybody does that. My little girlfriend, Karen, she got her cousin's porn films, and we watched it when we were 12, and we're like, ew, gross, yuck. And we're looking at how long the men were. We're like, oh, my God, get that thing away from me. Oh, hell no. Ew, it looks like a hot dog. So that's what we were saying. It traumatized me for years to come. I'm going to tell you. I'm like, ew. But, you know, I'm glad that was your, quote, drug of choice, so to speak, rather than doing alcohol and drugs. I mean, my goodness, at least you can overcome that, or at least deal with that. They have programs for that as well. And it looks like you certainly have become extremely successful. Again, I'm trying to get to that question. Not everybody who has experienced what you experience and decide to write a book, which is very cathartic for a lot of people. How and when and who or what made you decide to write a book about it?
And that goes back to more of those experiences that I've had in God's presence. He would wake me up in the middle of the night and actually be giving me the book. And what I learned is when I woke up, I couldn't remember what he was saying. So I started keeping paper next to my bed and making notes. And that stack of paper turned into my book. I started putting it into the computer around 2005. And I was still in the marriage at that time, so we didn't get divorced until 2011. So I was still writing the book and adding those occurrences of abuse and everything that we were going through those years. And it finally came out in 2015, of course, when I got completely away from him.
Wow. So you took all of your notes, and when did you finally get everything together? And I mean, one doesn't just go writing a book. I mean, there's a whole layout and a process, and you have to know how to do it. There's many, many steps. You got to find an agent or a publisher, or you can self-publish. And I mean, it's many, many different ways you can go about it. What was your process to get this book published?
I actually was introduced to a publisher who ended up going to the same high school that I actually went to. And then I met Gina, who is my publicist, on Facebook, actually. We began a relationship like a year or so before my book came out and just started building rapport that way. And I saw that she owned SPMG Media, and she and I developed a relationship. I actually call her my spiritual mom. And she's been helping me get the word out and helping my book spread the word on social media and all those things. So I'm grateful for her. And then I also was introduced by another author to the editor who helped me format my book and put it together. And then it was uploaded to Amazon and Barnes & Noble and Amazon UK and all those things. And that's how I was able to get it out to the world.
Okay, so Gina, who, shout out to Gina. Gina is awesome. Gina returns emails right away. I got to tell you, I deal with a lot of PR people, and with the exception of maybe two or three, it is like heck trying to get them to, you know, because they have a lot of clients. But she's extremely professional. I mean, I would highly recommend that if you need PR services, which I assume that she does, that you check her out. And let's give a shout out to her again, Gina from, let's do her website. What's her website address, Nikki?
SPMG Media.
SPMGmedia.com. Shout out to my Gina, who always returns my emails. She's wonderful. See, you want, see, that's one of the things when you're looking for a good PR person. You want somebody that returns your emails right away, that's on top of things. And honestly, I imagine you had no experience with how to do this. And for someone to take you from knowing nothing to getting your book out there, which is what she did, I imagine, right?
Yes, she did.
It's a process. So contact Gina. I love Gina. All right. So your book, again, is entitled What the Devil Meant for Bad, God Used for My Good. And we were able to coexist today, Nikki Alexander, as a believer in God and a non-believer. And see, if you and I can do it, why can't everybody else get along? We were able to get our points across. I didn't get mad at you for you believing in God. You didn't get mad at me for not believing in God. And we are coexisting and loving each other. We could even go out for a cocktail, I think, if we wanted to. See that? If Nikki and Priscilla can coexist, anyone can coexist. We just need to get along, people. It's just accepting each other's differences and just being tolerant and saying, you know what? You do your thing. I'm going to do mine. All you want is the good, right? Just the good. The good in everybody and everything. Right. So let's go and buy a copy of Nikki Alexander's book. Again, it is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, right?
Right. And
NikkiAlex.com. Yes. And go to her website, NikkiAlex.net, not .com, NikkiAlex.net. Go and buy the book today, because I tell you, I am still in shock and awe. I'm experiencing shock and awe today because I've never talked to anyone who's had a story like yours. I've read about it. I've seen it on television. I've seen it on Law & Order Special Victims Unit. I've seen it on all the shows. But until you meet someone that's experienced it, somehow it's always, it doesn't really seem real. You know, it's like, they're making that stuff up. But then you see it in the news, it's like, is that fake news, or is that something, you know, is it enhanced? But you are here today to say that these things exist. What, do not let your children be exposed to strangers, I would say.
Right.
What's your ending message for everyone, Nikki? What is the message for your fans and readers today?
My ending message is, if you're struggling through a relationship with domestic violence or any type of violence, whether it be physical, emotionally, or verbally, get out. Especially if you have children, you don't want them to grow up thinking that that's the way life is supposed to be. And just get out. Love yourself enough to get away.
You know what? As they said in the Amityville Horror and in Poltergeist, what did you hear? Get out. You don't have to tell me twice. Get out, right? If evil is telling you to get out, what the hell are you still doing in the house? They're telling you get out. Thank you so much, Nikki Alexander. Go to NikkiAlex.net. Thank you for sure. God, you know what? I'm an atheist, but I'm going to say it. God bless you, my child. God bless you, darling. I'm so glad that you have found your light, and I only wish you the best forever and ever.
Thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate
you. Thank you, sweetheart. Thank you so much. Thank you for tuning in. We'll see you next on Question Reality. Next week on Question Reality. Bye!
You're listening to Question Reality with Priscilla Leona, right here on LA Talk Radio.